Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Discover. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card. At the end of your first year, it's amazing because Discover is accepted 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. Okay. We have huge news. Albert Pujols was DFA'd. That's a designated for assignment. I have lots of thoughts on that one. Lots of thoughts on them that I will share with you throughout the show. I can only tell you, though, that what's curious is that Albert Pujols, who's a first ballot Hall of Famer, a great hitter, and obviously that signing did not prove fruitful in almost any way. Like, it's one of those things where the Angels will die on the hill of, hey, we drew 3 million people a year when he was here, even though we didn't win a playoff series. But the fact is that before Albert Pujols and after Albert Pujols, they drew 3 million people a year. They don't have their own network. I guess maybe it creates some inroads and maybe a little bit more money from their RSNs, but not a ton. It was a bad signing. There's just no other way around it. But it was not, they were not the highest bidders. And the Cardinals played it completely correctly. So there's a lot of stuff kind of to get to there. But cutting a guy on May 6th who isn't productive, I'm not trying to defend his level of productivity, but right when before he was about to face a pitcher whom he dominated, who has dominated previously, and oh yeah, by the way, like if you're going to cut a guy like that, if he's going to retire, then you say, hey, we're going to do this in a week. Let's have a couple of special games for Albert Pujols. They didn't. It tells you all you need to know. Let me start, though, with this story. So the Aaron Rodgers saga continues. And I think the great thing about this network is that from Clay in the morning to Dan to Colin to me, right, you have four very different, not just unique styles of doing a show, but you also, this is not, I mean, one of the things I didn't like when I was at ESPN was the car wash effect. And I understand that many of you, and the way we were always taught as radio guys is like, look, something happened previously in the day, even on the same radio network. It doesn't matter. You have a different listener. The problem with it is if you don't have unique interviews, you don't have a unique show. And oh yeah, by the way, once you get to the third or fourth interview, a lot of times the guys get punchy and they just want to get it done more than anything. So what's great is my guest booker is different than Colin's guest booker, is different than Dan's guest booker. Do we all work for the same company? Do we have a boss who tries to integrate everything kind of together? Sure. But, you know, Clay had the president on, the last president. You know, Colin has had on some of his own kind of unique guest. Dan, by my estimation, he's longstanding been not only the best interviewer in the business and sports radio, but he has different relationships and will put different people on than Colin or Clay or even me can in his reach. Like Dan obviously has done everything. And then the people we have on are different than those. So what I love about this is you have a diversity, not just of voices and styles, but also of guests. Adam Schefter, of course, works at ESPN where Dan, me, Colin all used to work. Was on with Dan this morning. Now, remember, here's his initial tweet. And then, of course, he was on NFL Live after this tweet on draft day. That's a week ago today. This is what happened while we were doing this show. Reigning MVP Aaron Rodgers is so disgruntled with the Green Bay Packers that he has told some within the organization that he does not feel, that does not want to return to the team. League and team sources told ESPN on Thursday. This is Adam Schefter earlier this morning.
This was an accumulation all during the offseason of just listening to people talk and observing. And if we go back to the NFC Championship game, and it sounds almost like he's saying goodbye to Green Bay. And so your antenna's up, and I'm just telling you throughout the course of the offseason, there was rarely a week that went by where I didn't hear something about Aaron Rodgers. And on draft day, there's a report that morning from Paul Allen out in Minneapolis that the 49ers made a draft offer, which they didn't make an offer. They never made an offer. And other people are saying that the 49ers called. And I said, how long till it gets out that Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay? Is it next week? Is it next when he doesn't show to the OTAs? Is it next month when he isn't? It's going to come out. What does it matter if it comes out now or next week or next month? And so.
So you chose to break the news on draft day.
That is absolutely accurate. Correct.
But it wasn't something that you got information about.
No. And it was nothing that morning that came in.
Okay.
All of a sudden said to me, yeah, he wants out. You should report this. Like, it was going on all off season. There was more and more talk. And now there's starting to be Aaron Rodgers talk. And I said, you know what? This isn't going to wait much longer. Let's just go. And it just happened to be draft day.
Just happened to be draft day. I if you believe that, I have oceanfront property in the state of Kansas for you. I like Adam. He's as respected as anybody in the business. But the covering of his tracks poorly, right? Like, this is like dudes who commit a crime and then it's not the crime, it's the cover-up that ends up getting them caught. Well, we didn't actually find any blood, but we found excessive amounts of bleach and acid where we thought there might be blood. Like, you're covering things up. Oh, and I didn't get the information from Aaron Rodgers or his camp, and I didn't get the information from the Packers. Of course you didn't get it from the Packers. Do you think the Packers want people to know that Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to come back to the Green Bay Packers? Like, that's not even... And I've heard from people that they think the Green Bay Packers leaked this. Why would they do that? Why would they do that? There is only two possible believable scenarios. One is that Adam Schefter did this to draw attention to himself and the shows that he's on and the NFL draft himself. That is it. That is plausible. Plausible. The other possibility, okay, the other possibility is that Aaron Rodgers wanted this out on draft day as an epic to the Packers. Also plausible. Did we find out if either of which are true? It felt a little bit more like the former than the latter, but that doesn't actually mean it was the former, not the latter. No, I didn't get any new information. There was nothing new. This is just an accumulation. It just happened to be draft day. I was born at night, not last night. I like Adam, but the covering of the tracks, I don't know how anybody could think that Aaron Rodgers would put this out there. Why would anybody think that anybody other than me? It wasn't one source telling me. This was over an off-season of accumulation of information. Look, he's right. There was an off-season of stuff. But to only report it at that very moment on that very day, it's so highly unlikely that it almost becomes laughable. It does. This is former teammate John Kuhn on Aaron's situation.
If I used my gut and I used everything that I said that I hear from the Packers organization, it makes me feel really, really good. If I use the football business acumen and see the tough spot that the Packers are in right now with that first-round pick that they used last year on Jordan Love, that's what makes me pull back a little bit. I still think it's somewhere around 70-75% that Aaron Rodgers is the starting quarterback for the Packers this year.
It's John Kuhn. I've heard all kinds of scenarios. None of them make sense. I'm not trading him to Denver. Why would they wave the white flag on a season where they went to the NFC Championship game the past 2 years, this time having home field advantage, and thinking they've improved their weaknesses at cornerback and at offensive line? I think logically. I cut out emotion of it. I tell you what I really think, what I really hear, what I really know. Two other quarterbacks have floated out wanting to be traded, Deshaun Watson. Granted, it can't be traded now, but he wasn't being traded previously. And Russell Wilson. And many others have offered up the possibility of wanting to go elsewhere because they couldn't, they didn't like decisions that were made by the front office. Congrats.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So Mark Feinsand covers the Angels and all things baseball. So the Angels are releasing Albert Pujols, a future Hall of Famer. Pujols in the final year of a $253 million contract. He's not actually, like, if you look at Albert Pujols' deal, it actually doesn't even end when it ends. That's the worst part about it, is it doesn't actually end when it ends. Keep in mind, this is a guy who signed a deal, and it's $30 million here in his last year. I believe he's still paid after this for, like, making appearances for the team. That's what's really weird about it, right? It's their 3-4 months away from getting out of this contract, and they still, you know, they still want to get out of it. We'll go to our resident Angel expert, Gavin. Gavin, what do you think of the timing of releasing Albert Pujols?
I thought it was very weird. I really thought, you know, whether or not the Angels would do well this season, they would want to get him further up the record books. So that's why this comes as a stunning moment. Do you remember where you were when the trade happened, or the signing happened? Because I do, in 2011. I remember the news coming. I was at a Starbucks in Fullerton, and I remember telling the barista couldn't care at all, but I was like, oh my God, the Angels just got Albert Pujols, coming off an MVP season again, I think. And just amazing.
He was hitting 198 with 5 home runs, 92 plate appearances. They started him 20 of the first 29 games, and he had 2 games at DH. Yes, John Ramos.
Yeah, but nobody. I remember when he was signed to, and I remember Sports Talk Radio, and maybe we were talking about it. Maybe the show I was on before was, or whatever. But nobody that I talked to or saw ever said, you know what? That 10th year is going to be great. I mean, nobody thought that he would fill that full 10 with Albert Pujols-like numbers. I mean, this is not shocking to me that he's batting 198 and on the decline. I mean, I think they knew that going in. They just hoped the first 4 years, which I thought he did very well, were going to be enough to get him to the playoffs and to win a World Series, and it just never materialized.
Look, here's what happened to the Angels, and people don't want to, you know, everybody, they didn't win a playoff series and whatever. They were the best team in baseball in 2014. They were 98-64, and they were beaten by the Kansas City Royals in 3 games. And the Royals, remember, came from behind, I believe, to beat the Rangers in the wild card game. Remember, they used to be the
it was the
wild card game. But the first 2 games of that series against the Royals in Anaheim, the problem wasn't the starting pitching. It was they lost in extra innings, 3-2 and 4-1. But it was all both in 11 innings. So, yeah, they didn't hit, and the Royals went to the playoffs, but it was more a that's baseball sort of thing, right? I mean, they were a great baseball team. And after that, the next year, they only won 85. They won, in his first 3 years there, they won 89, then 78, then 98, 85. And then, you know, the roof kind of fell in after a while. But also, Trout would be hurt in some big instances, and their pitching wasn't good enough. And that's really kind of what it came down to, is their pitching just wasn't good enough. Now, could they have used some of the money they paid to Albert Pujols for better pitching? Yes, but money wasn't really the issue. It was just complete mismanagement and then a lot of bad luck, right? You have their top overall prospect killed in a car accident. You have another starting pitcher who dies of the drug overdose. You know, you have other pitchers who just fizzle, and many who have gotten hurt. They had massive injuries to their pitching staff. Everything that possibly could have gone wrong with the pitching staff has gone wrong with the Angels pitching staff. Pujols, meanwhile, has never really been their best player. He just hasn't. In terms of wins above replacement, he has never been their best player. That's the more stunning thing. The stunning thing is not how it ended. The stunning thing is how it wasn't really ever all that great, right? Like in the year in which, they were the best team in baseball, Albert Pujols hit 272, OBP 324, right? 28 home runs. He was good. But Mike Trout was the better player. You know, and remember they had the Josh Hamilton debacle as well. That all happened all about the kind of the same time. They gave Josh Hamilton a 5-year, $125 million deal. Vernon Wells, 7 years, 126. CJ Wilson, 5 years, $77 million. None of them really panned out.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Matt Money Smith joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Money, what do you think of the timing of the Albert Pujols release?
Well, I would guess that they probably, you know, went to Albert. I mean, you've been around a long time, Doug. You know, you get around some people that have an aura about them, or they're just supremely kind to everyone they come in contact with. And you know, my limited interactions with Pujols were like that, just as likable a superstar as I've ever been around. And I'm sure the Angels felt the same way, and that would lead me to believe they went to him and said, hey, this ain't working out. We can't have you barking at Joe if you're trying to stat chase when he's trying to build a team that we know you're not going to be part of long term. So do you want to walk away? And I guess that probably got contentious, and this was the last straw, and they're like, fine, we're done. Because I've got to believe that they would have tried. Look, I remember when they signed Albert, and I brought this up. I said, everybody was, you know, saying what a disaster this deal is. You got to think about the last 5 years. And I said, look, the Angels TV deal is up. The Angels are not the Dodgers. They don't sell those kind of tickets. They don't move the needle like that. But if you can sell Albert Pujols and 3,000 hits and 600 home runs and all that, you're probably going to get a good TV deal. And what happened? They signed Albert Pujols. They get a $2 billion deal from Fox and Prime Ticket for their local TV. Little did we know Mike Trout was going to turn out to maybe be the greatest baseball player that ever lived, and they wouldn't have needed to do it. But I do think it served that purpose, and I think the Angels have $2 billion in their pocket.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, but May 6th? Like, why wouldn't you do it? Why wouldn't you do it? Hey, man, like, we're going to have one last weekend at the Big A, and then we're going to, you know, then we'll release you. You know, next weekend, we'll find a big series to, we'll put you on the DL for a couple weeks, and then one last big series. Why now?
Well, I think probably that's what they wanted to do. And Albert probably said, no, I'm not going to go quietly. I'm going to go to my scribes that I've known for 20 years in this game, and I'm going to leak that I want to play, you guys won't play me, and it's going to get ugly. And so I think here it gives the Angels the opportunity to essentially wield the sword, right? And release, we love Albert, we appreciate Albert, that's why we're giving him his release right now, so he can seek other opportunity kind of stuff, right? If he's not going to go out gracefully, we're going to force him to go out gracefully by saying what a great person he is and how much we appreciate him. That way they control the message, he doesn't, if it got sideways on him here.
Yeah.
Never ends well, Doug, you know that. It doesn't. You know, it ended well for David Ortiz, and that's it. It doesn't matter the sport, right? It is almost impossible for it to end how the player wants it to end. Especially the superstars that we have grown to love and appreciate as the icons of their era, because they hang on too long. You know, because they're paid to hang on too long. And why would you walk away from $30 million a year?
Give me your take on the Aaron Rodgers situation.
I don't buy. I think he leaked it. I think it was a horrible thing that he did. I'm someone who's been part of the draft for 10 years now. I get to go to the combine and I get to meet these kids and I get to see the excitement on their face and them realizing this dream they've had their entire lives. And these 3-4 days should be all about them. And it should be a celebration of their rising from the amateur ranks to the professional ranks and achieving a dream that 1% of 1% of 1% of 1% of the football playing public gets to realize. And he cast a pall over all of that, and shame on him for doing that, and shame on his agent for doing that, because they wanted to fast track this thing, because, you know, there's no sense in trading for Rodgers now. You know, you're not going to get those draft assets until next year. If you're the Packers, you've already paid him $7 million in a roster bonus. And why with that sunk cost would you move on with the reigning MVP in a roster that looks like it's the best in the NFC along with the Bucs? Just doesn't make any sense. So I totally think it was the Rodgers camp that leaked this and tried to force their hand to see if someone would freak out, right, and overpay and give him a bunch of draft picks so they could move him.
Right. And on a draft, Adam Schefter went on Dan Patrick today and said, like, I just, nobody called me. There was no breaking info. This is an off season where I accumulated all this information and I just so happened to put it out on draft day. Like,
yeah, no, don't buy it. It's all Rodgers. And again, and I mean, is it harsh? Sure. But shame on him. It's funny when I came on, Doug, and you were talking about A-Rod, I wasn't quite sure which direction you were going to go because I brought this up. It reeks of A-Rod, you know, leaking his contract information at the start of the World Series. And everyone's like, what a jerk. It's the World Series, man. Just wait a week. And then we'll find out that you're going to the Yankees. All right? Just enough. And I think, you know, it's A-Rod and A-Rod coincidence. We all know he's been a bit of an abrasive personality. You never hear people talk about Aaron Rodgers like they talk about Tom Brady, you know, or some of these other quarterbacks that have guys that will move to Tampa to play with them in Gronk and in AB. And you know, you hear how excited they are to play with. I just don't feel like we hear that about A-Rod, you know, about Aaron Rodgers. So, I thought it was a bad look for him. And I think it's a bad and super selfish move. Just because I want to celebrate those 300 kids. And I want them to have that weekend be all about them and their families and enjoy it. And I feel like, look, if you're Eric Stokes, this should be a day that, man, is unlike any other. And I'm sure it was. But when your name gets read by the Packers and everyone's like, well, that's not going to make Rodgers happy, another corner in the first round. Thanks a lot, Aaron. You know, that should have been Eric Stokes, corner. They could use corner help. It's a passing league. This guy ran 4.3, played in the SEC. He's got length. He's got size. What a great draft pick. Instead, it was, well, Aaron's going to be pissed about this one. And that's on Aaron Rodgers.
Matt Money Smith joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's get closer to home. Obviously, you're the voice of the Chargers. I feel like you talked about the roster of the Packers, and everybody likes what they saw from Justin Herbert, but let's not go crazy. He's only been in the league for a year. He's got a whole new coaching staff, but it does feel like he has an incredible team around him.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, Doug, he played behind the worst offensive line in the league last year. And as I was kind of, you know, doing some podcasts and TV and stuff, getting ready for the draft, a lot of people, I found myself kind of engaging with some folks and it was good. It was spirited, but they were like, you have to take an OL in the first round. You have to take a tackle. You have to take a tackle. If you don't, it's a failure of a draft. Now, look, it broke that way, right? They had a top 10 player sitting at 13. Some people think the best left tackle in the draft. And I said, but wait a minute. Let's not forget. Justin Herbert threw for 4,400 yards and 31 touchdowns behind the worst offensive line in the league. So if you can just move it to average, if you can just move it to the middle as opposed to dead last, think about how much better he's going to be. So don't feel like you're trapped into and painted into this corner where you have to draft for need. Now, it did work out. And they now have what I think is league average to maybe one of the better offensive lines with the free agent signings, Lindsley at center, Filer. You got Brian Bulaga, who they feel like last year had an outlier injury season. And now you got Slater. So that's going to be a huge upgrade. The issues that plagued them missed a chunk. Melvin Ingram missed almost the entire season. Derwin missed the whole season. Their corners were never healthy. I feel like they got better depth now, but at the same time, they lost five games that they had leads in the fourth quarter. And I mean, some were like the Saints game. They were up with 2 minutes left. Then the Saints tied it with a field goal, and Justin Herbert had them in field goal range for a game-winning kick that missed. They were up three on the Chiefs in the final 2 minutes of a game that Patrick Mahomes ends up tying up that game and winning in overtime. Like, there were so many of those just bad decisions, bad breaks, mismanaging the clock, bad special teams that we know is historically one of the worst special teams units in NFL history. You feel like if you can just get that back to the middle from all the way at the edge of one of the worst, I do think this is one of the better rosters and one of the better teams. And a lot of people are excited about their new head coach, Brandon Staley.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, now do the Rams.
Well, I think if you just go quarterback production, right, and if you're willing to kind of subscribe to the idea, and I am, that Sean McVay is one of the best play callers in the league. When it comes to offense, you're going to have a hard time out. You know, if you're a defensive coordinator, you better be super sharp. So it was clear that Jared Goff could not do everything Sean McVay wanted to do. And, you know, the Chargers played him 2 years ago. And just watching, talking to Gus Bradley before that game and him talking about just the fit, the way he uses motion, some of the plays you just don't quite see coming because there's always a wrinkle. I think when you have Stafford back there instead of Goff, that's going to make such a big difference. We've seen them plug and play guys, right? Josh Reynolds, Jefferson, didn't matter who the back was, Malcolm Brown, Todd Gurley. It's just kind of, it's very Shanahan-esque, right? The names don't really matter. It's almost like the system, and I hate doing that, right, because everybody's so, you know, got to have talent on your roster, but it does seem like in the case of McVay and Kyle Shanahan, the scheme really is that important to their success. So when you drop, you know, when you drop Stafford there and then you flip it to the other side of the ball and you've got the best player in the NFL and Aaron Donald on the front end and Jalen Ramsey, the best corner in the league on the back, man, that is just a nightmare to deal with. So I do think they're the best team in the NFC West, and I expect big things out of them.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Matt Money Smith is our guest. All right, help me out with the LeBron thing. Okay. So okay. He says this ankle injury is the worst injury he's ever suffered. Now, for his money, he's right. You know, he hasn't suffered many injuries, but he said he'll never be the same. It'll never be the same. And then he lashes out at whoever came up with the play-in game idea when they're not in the play-in game, but then he doesn't play a couple of games and they're going to play their way into the play-in game. What's really going on with LeBron?
I think similar to what we talked about with Pujols, but certainly nowhere near that dire as it stands right now. I think it's the worst injury he's ever sustained because he's old, you know, and he's got all those minutes and he's got all that wear on that body, and it's not recovering perhaps like he's. I think we all that are old enough to recognize go through it, and it's weird, you know, like for whatever reason. You know, if you're someone who is active or athletic or whatever you may do to participate in games or hobbies or activities, there's a certain point in your life when your body just all of a sudden you feel like betrays you, and you're like, hey, wait a minute, man, why can't I go play golf for the next 2 weeks? Because every time I take a backswing, the back is tweaked. I remember getting this injury 10 years ago, and I was back out there in the afternoon. I can just stretch it out, ice it, Advil, I'm good. And I think that's probably what's going on with LeBron is an injury that he would be back from already. I mean, we know, you said it, Doug, it is probably the worst injury because the guy never misses games. He would fight through everything, play through everything, never get hurt in the first place. And so I think this is maybe him kind of getting a look at Father Time and saying, man, I don't like this. I do not like this at all, especially when I got to play. And I mean, look at the play-in game, right? If you have a play-in game and you got to start thinking about Steph Curry and facing elimination against a guy who can drop 60 on you if he gets hot and your defense ain't right, I can see why he'd lash out and be all frustrated.
Yeah, my thought of it is this. Matt Money Smith, our guest, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. My thought of it is, you know, we all know people who just live those blessed lives where everything works out in their favor. And then when those same people, something happens in terms of adversity, they don't know how to deal with it. I think that's LeBron in terms of injuries, you know, is that he legitimately has no idea how to deal with being injured because he's never been injured before. And look, a high ankle sprain is when instead of like you're the outside of your foot going under the inside of your foot, it's the inside of your foot going over the outside of your foot, right? That's why. And everybody has, like, look, it takes a lot longer. It is really painful. It does suck. But he had to know that he wasn't going to play in those games and that his team was going to lose. Otherwise, why talk about a play-in game, which if you just win games, you're not playing in anyway.
Yeah, and I think it's also disappointment in the roster, right? I mean, it's disappointment that, you know, Anthony Davis on his own should be enough to carry this team to some of the wins for the teams that they lost to that are the dregs of the Eastern and Western Conference, that they're you know, stringing together losses when they should at least be able to kind of hover around 500. So I think there's frustration there. You know, if you're that guy that feels like, hey man, my back is hurting from carrying you guys all this time. Can you just give me 2 weeks? Can you give me 2 weeks where you're just kind of balling and stepping up, where I don't have to freak out? So I think there's that frustration as well. And I think, you know, I think he maybe sees the landscape and the path as being a little more perilous than last year. You know, and look, we're going through it with the Dodgers right now, where everybody mentioned asterisk, you know, a 60-game season, bubble playoffs, no home field or road trips. And I wonder if he looks at that with the Lakers, like, yeah, in the bubble, you know, weird playoff season, no home field event, no travel, you know, thinking about trying to just validate that run to a championship by winning one back-to-back, and probably recognizes this is probably his best shot. Like I said, if it's starting to slip away, health, you know, health-wise and activity-wise with his body because of his age and minutes and wear. But, you know, and I like your theory as well. You know, the first time you've had to face some sort of serious adversity injury-wise and you don't know how else to respond to it than to lash out because everything's been a bed of roses.
Matt, great stuff, dude. Love listening to your show. Like watching you on NFL Network as well. Can't wait to hear you call some Charger games in the very near future. Appreciate you being our guest.
Always love coming on, Doug. Thanks for having me, man.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. I got a lot to get to here. Are we going to use the Nick Wright sound now, or do you want to use it in the What the Fox Say? Because I love Chris Paul. I've always been my statement about Chris Paul has been Chris Paul plays basketball exactly the way I wanted to play basketball. I was a very good player, and I can play in a pickup game now. And again, you always have your limitations as a human, your limitations as a basketball player. I'm in my mid-40s. I don't play as much as I'd like to. I'm in, for a normal 45-year-old man, I'm in good shape. If I want to play against younger guys in basketball, I'm not in the best shape that I could be in, even at my age. But like, you know, this past weekend, on Saturdays, I go down, I play at this really nice gym. And what's fascinating about it is I know I can still kind of control a game, get to where I need to get to, get everybody shots and win game. Like I know I can make my team win far more games than the normal accumulation of our talent should allow us to win. What it takes for that to happen is the guys have to trust me, right? Like one of the things in basketball, which I have a hard time with is nowadays, a lot of times outside of the center, guy gets a rebound, he just takes it up the court. Whereas I've always gotten that first outlet pass and been the guy who creates shots. In order to do that in a pickup game where you don't know who you're playing with, they just have to instinctively trust you and go like, I'm just going to give it to him and thinking it's probably going to come back to me. Because it is. It's not that you can't run a break. It's not that you can't make passes. It's that you can't make passes or run a break nearly as well as I can, which is going to allow you a better possibility of making shots and winning a game. So I think it's like, I love Chris Paul. And obviously he's been part of this massive change within the Phoenix Suns, where you could call him the NBA's MVP. You could, in terms of value to a team. You know, look what he did last year in Oklahoma City. Look what he did this year in Phoenix. Heck, look where he had Houston and where they were after he left. Look where he was in New Orleans and in Oklahoma City when he was there. He's not the only MVP candidate. Most people think Jokic will win it from Denver. But here's Nick Wright on First Things First talking about Kevin Durant.
If the Nets can't win the title with Kyrie Irving playing the best basketball of his life and with Kevin Durant staying healthy, if James Harden doesn't come back, then Kevin Durant can't be the best player in the league. Because there is no super team to go through. But when there was 5 years ago, a 73-win team, and you had the actual best player in the league, and who was his best teammate? I remember his name, went to Duke. Oh, it's Kyrie Irving. They won that series. So it's not like it can't be done. It's not like KD and Kyrie, oh my God. Not in 2021. There are no triplets except for the ones that reside in Brooklyn. So if the belief is, Wilds, that you've got to have Harden for the Nets to be able to win the title, then that answers the question. And that's not me disrespecting Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant is sensational. I think Kevin Durant has a better argument for best player. Let me rephrase it. I think Kevin Durant is clearly the best player on his own team. I do think he's better than James Harden. But if the belief is the Nets have to add another MVP to the mix when they already have KD and Kyrie in order to win the title, then obviously he's not the best player alive.
That's just the most flawed logic there is. It's the most flawed logic there is. It has nothing to do with having to add James Harden. It has to do with you can't have two alpha scorers who can pass and not have a guy who facilitates all of that and orchestrates all of it and has the respect of all of them. Right? You can't, they're so highly leveraged. Like, look, this is basically the difference in investments. Right? The late Boone Pickens was a boomer bust financial investor. And it's kind of the Texas oil man way, where they are so highly leveraged that when they win big. When they lose big. You guys know who the head of Berkshire Hathaway is, right? I mean, we do know who the leader of Berkshire Hathaway is, Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett is the GOAT investor, right? He understands and reads them. And now not everything that he does is perfect. But generally, he's the guy who, whatever Warren Buffett does, if you simply followed all of his trades over the last 50 years, you'd be a billionaire. And if you started with thousands, you'd be a multi-millionaire. You just did what Warren did. Now, his way of investing is not nearly as highly leveraged. That's the difference in what the Nets have done. Kevin Durant doesn't, on a normal year, need a superstar leader point guard like a James Harden in order to win. But when your team trades away most of their team in order to get James Harden, well, then yeah, we need him. It's like the most infuriating argument where you're not admitting that not all teams are created alike. It's the same thing with the, and this is Nick's way of getting around to LeBron. Well, LeBron took down a super team with the Warriors. They weren't a super team. They won 73 games, but they had two stars and they had Kevin Durant. I mean, Kevin said they had Draymond Green. And oh yeah, by the way, they were without two of their starters for two of the games and one, and they didn't have Andrew Bogut for three of the games, five, six, and seven. So with that in mind, like, what argument are you creating? Nick does the same thing with talking about stats and wins and whatever. Look, I think Chris Paul is great. the true value to Chris Paul, I do think we're starting to see in that he's a leader, he's a winner, he makes everybody around him better. But how can we dismiss what Jokic has done and the success and talent of that team? And oh yeah, by the way, he's kept them afloat even when they lose their other star. So I understand the argument, which is it's always Nick's argument to somehow take away from Kevin Durant. Like, look, Kevin Durant's played in 29 games. He's averaging 28 a game. He's shooting 54% from two, 48% from three. Like, the numbers are obscene. He's averaging over five assists a game. He's averaging over a block a game. He's not rebounding at nearly as high a clip as at the peak of his career, but you're off by like one rebound. The guy is the complete package. Complete package. And if you want to say he's not the best because they got to add one of the great players, that's just obtuse to the general, the realistic argument, which is every team is different. And if a team is built around three stars and you're missing one of them and there's a massive drop-off because, like, do we know who Brooklyn's bringing off the bench? Who's the Brooklyn starting instead of starting James Harden? Right, go ahead and look at it. For example, they lost to the Milwaukee Bucks in their last two games. The Brooklyn Nets' other starters were Jeff Green, Joe Harris, DeAndre Jordan. Landry Shamet came off the bench with Bruce Brown, Mike James, Nicholas Claxton, and Blake Griffin. Like, some of those names sound really good, but the reality of it is DeAndre Jordan's a non-scorer, took one shot in the game. Jeff Green's a nice player, but like, he's a bench player. And Joe Harris is just a shooter. So you're really going 2-on-5. 2-on-5. And I like Landry Shamet a lot. I do. But like, let's not kid ourselves. There's a reason that the Clippers and the 76ers and Toronto have all parted ways with Landry Shamet. He's a good off-the-bench shooter who can play. Is he a starting caliber player on a championship team? The answer is no.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Rick Bucher joins us. This guy knows more about the NBA than just about anybody. He joins us here in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Let me start with LeBron. I know he says lots of things at press conferences, which if you actually pay attention, like, wait, what? But he said, you know, whoever came up with the play-in tournament should be fired. Now, look, I'm not going to tell you that I watch NBA basketball every night. You know, there are nights when it's like, eh, and I've been watching. But not only does it work for the teams fighting for to get that 10th spot, yeah, but it's helped with the 4th and 5th and 6th spot because they don't want to fall back to the play-in tournament. Like, it's a win. Why do you think that he took his time and called out the tournament when he didn't have to do so?
Honestly, I just feel there are times where LeBron really doesn't think through what he's saying and doesn't respect the platform that he has, the power that he has, the influence that whatever he says has, or at least the resonance that it has, the way that it resonates. That's why we always see him saying things and then walking them back and saying something else. And it's always been my thing. Like, I appreciate that he speaks his mind, but when you have as much power and influence and your message carries as far as it does, there has to be some more forethought that goes into it. And honestly, I just think he looked at it. He looked at the pressure that he is now facing and the Lakers are now facing in wanting to avoid that play-in game. It complicates matters for him because he can't just kind of roll into the playoffs the way the Lakers did last year in a similar situation where a little bit different in terms of coming off of a shutdown as opposed to coming back from an injury, but similar circumstances for him. And I just think he looked at it and said, I don't like it. I know that he expressed some question about it before, but as you said, this is the difficulty that I have with taking anything that LeBron says at face value, which is, does he really mean it? And is he going to be saying the same thing tomorrow, or where does he stand? And so I think he just in the moment just blurted out like he doesn't like it because of the circumstance that he and the Lakers find themselves in.
All right. What about the idea that this injury is so devastating he'll never be the same when it's a high ankle sprain?
Boy, I don't get that. Well, again, sort of looking at his track record, LeBron doesn't like when the pressure is on him, when there's an expectation. And this alleviates that. I mean, from the beginning, we have said we felt like this is the Lakers. We didn't feel the Lakers were the team last year until they proved otherwise. This year, pretty much with the changes last offseason and looking around the league, nobody being a favorite. If it was by default, so what? But the bottom line was that the Lakers were expected to win another championship. And I would say that everybody's still of the mind that if healthy, they should be the favorite. And so I feel as if LeBron, whether he questions the ability of his team overall or questions his ability physically to meet the expectations, wants the out of, hey, I told you. And then now if he does it, if he is successful, now everybody's going to go, oh, he's not 100% and he's still got it done. It just underscores the amazing ability of LeBron James. And if he doesn't get it done, then it's, well, hey, I told you guys I wasn't 100% and I may never be 100% again. The confusing part is talking that way and at the same time knowing that he wants to play long enough to be able to play at least a year with his son Bron Bron. So again, you know, where you take what LeBron says is it's often open to interpretation. But for me, it's a matter of let me just give myself an out in case this doesn't go the way I want it to go.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Can I offer up a different possibility?
Sure. Please, Doug, because I'm spitballing here.
Grant, again, and this is spitball. This is spitballing as well. He's never really been hurt, right? Like Durant had the year where he broke his foot, right? So when Durant had the Achilles tendon thing, like he's known what it's like when basketball is taken from him and how to work back and the frustrations of it. Now he had the groin 2 years ago. Okay, he had the groin 2 years ago, and now he has this. And everybody who's ever had this type of ankle sprain, remember, it means like the outside of your foot, instead of coming under the inside of your foot, it's like the inside of your foot gets turned the other way. Like it's reverse rolling your ankle. That's really what happened to him. It takes longer. It is painful. And it's one of those nagging injuries that takes a long time to go away. But it's different when you've never been hurt. Like I get this all the time from people. I played basketball last Saturday and the whole rest of the weekend, My knee was giving me problems. Like it legitimately hurt. And, you know, people are like, well, you know, you've hurt yourself before. Like, no, I've actually never been hurt. Knock wood. Like I've never. And whether or not I have a high pain threshold, like I do wonder like, okay, can I not play basketball anymore without my knee hurting? So I think that's where he is. I think it's, here's the guy who's never been hurt. Now he's hurt. He doesn't know why it's not just healing as quickly as possible. It's still kind of nagging him. And just like a guy who's never really faced real life adversity, they face life adversity, it feels a lot worse than to everybody else. Yeah. That's him with injury. Is that a possibility?
You have sparked another possibility here, which is, regardless of what the numbers say, physically LeBron James isn't the same as he was 3-4 years ago.
Age
and the minutes that he's played, that, you know, for all that he's done to put into his body to keep it in prime shape, he's not quite the same. He's lost a little bit. And maybe it's that compounded by the limitations of the high ankle sprain, an injury, has him feeling like, man, I don't know if I'm ever going to get back to where I was, because I was already feeling the effects of age, and now I have this ankle sprain. Like, I could see where that would lead somebody to say, I can't imagine that I'm ever going to be the same again, because I've never felt this bad before. So I think we're kind of saying the same thing,
sure.
And that this is a brand new level of mortality physically that he's feeling for the first time ever, and that it's a combination of age and the injury. And it's, you know, maybe for all the work that he's done and for as long as he's done it, that he thought he was going to be, you know, invincible. I mean, he wasn't going to have to suffer what every other mortal has to suffer when it comes to aging. And now he's discovering suddenly otherwise.
So it's an interesting point. Do you think it hurts him long term in the old Jordan LeBron argument? And I only point it out because we didn't. And I know Jordan's knee gave him problems when he came back with the Wizards. And he wasn't, maybe his calf too. He wasn't nearly the same or whatever. But that documentary, like, here's how big that documentary was. Aaron Rodgers used the Jerry Krause reference to his current general manager, right? That reference goes over the heads of most current NFL players, if not for that documentary, right?
True.
Like, and this is LeBron woe is me-ing it and kind of complaining about things. I can't think that this helps him in the, and I don't care. Like, I think he's a very normal middle 30s guy. Like, this happens, but I do think that people will judge him more harshly because of the image that Jordan presented in the documentary.
Yeah, look, the documentary reset everything when it came to the Jordan LeBron debate, largely because it, I think, for a large swath of fans and just the general audience saw what Michael Jordan really was and what he really did and what he really faced and what he overcame and the physicality of the game at the time. Because up until now, I think what the comparisons that I have seen have always been statistical. It's always been, well, look at LeBron out-rebounding him, or he has more assists or whatever it is, and it didn't take into context the game that was actually being played and the ruthlessness, the consistent daily ruthlessness of Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan in a million years would never say, you know what, I'm not 100%. And it wouldn't even dawn on him that that mattered. It wouldn't matter what percentage he was or how he was feeling. His whole mindset was, I'm going to go out and I'm going to kill you. I'm going to go out and I'm going to beat you today, tomorrow, the day after. I am going to prove to you that I am the best, that I am better than you. And it wasn't a matter of I'm going to say I'm the best. I'm just going to go prove it. I'm just going to do it. So the whole idea of assessing where he was not something that ever occurred to him. And that's where LeBron is different. Now, the question when we come to comparing them is that's somewhat of a narrative. When everything recedes, are we then going to go back to the numbers? Are people just going to go back to the record books? Are they going to go back to the statistics and make the comparison there? Because if you do that, then you can continue to have a conversation. If you look at the way the two of them approach the game on a daily basis, on a yearly basis, on the way from coming into the league to when they went out, then there is no comparison. You've never put LeBron James and Michael Jordan in the same sentence unless you go to the statistics, and right, then you can have a conversation. And I just, having lived through it, having seen it firsthand, I always knew, like, you want to talk about Jordan, you can compare him to Kobe, but you can't. Jordan and LeBron, there's just no comparison when it comes to what kind of players they were.
Rick Bucher joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Where are you on the MVP?
Whew. Well, I got my ballot yesterday or the day before, and I know that the top three guys on my ballot, five-man ballot, are Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Chris Paul. The order, I have not quite determined just yet. But I would say that as of right now, I am leaning toward Giannis Antetokounmpo. I look at what he is this year, and I look, I know the reason why nobody else is talking about him, because they voted for him for the last 2 years. I did not. So I don't have that pressure or that guilt on me that, well, I thought he was the MVP, and then he didn't do what MVP should do in the postseason, and if I vote for him again this year, that means I'm putting him in the category of Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell and Larry Bird having three consecutive MVPs, and I don't want to do that. I don't have that burden to carry. What I see of Giannis Antetokounmpo right now is the Giannis that I've always wanted to see if he's a true MVP, which is, can I go to you? Can I ask you to be my playmaker, and will you embrace that? He has done that. He has made himself a mid-range threat. He's not afraid to take that shot with the game on the line. And at the same time, he's demonstrating the poise that if they crowd him there, he's going to find the open guy. And so when I combine that with what he does defensively, he really, to me, is a marriage of, if you're going to give Chris Paul, if you can put Chris Paul in the conversation, it's the intangibles. It's the leadership. It's the it's the demand on everybody else. Giannis has given me that this year. He was the guy when they struggled at the beginning, said, we got to stay with it. This will make us better in the postseason. He was the guy stepping up and speaking to that. And he has the, if you want to say Jokic is a slightly better offensive threat, okay, I'll give you that, but he's not nearly the defensive presence that Giannis is. So
sure.
When I add it all together, that's why I'm leaning Giannis. Jokic, I don't have a problem with. I have a hard time seeing Chris Paul really at the top because it negates the development of Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton and the addition of Jay Crowder. They were 8-0 in the bubble last year. So it's not as if they were the losing team last year and then suddenly turned it when Chris showed up. I give him a lot of credit. I think he is a difference maker. I just don't know if it's quite enough to put him, to make him the MVP of the league.
Rick Bucher, check him out on FS1. He does a great job. Follow him on social media as well, at Rick with the RIC Bucher, BUCHER. Bucher, the best, man. Thanks so much.
You got it, Doug.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.